Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
Season 3, Episode 3 of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Redcon One, Balanced Body Labs, Old School Labs, and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another edition of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I'm your host, John Henson, and today we are continuing Season 3, where we are talking about the 1981 Mr. Olympia. And our guests this week, actually we have two guests, and they're very special guests. Danny Padilla, who was one of the outstanding bodybuilders of the 1980s. He was the original Giant Killer. And Danny, of course, was part of that 1981 Mr. Olympia. Many, many people thought Danny should have won. We just talked to Roger Schwab 2 weeks ago. He thought Danny should have won. John Balick, I think last week, thought Danny should have won. So we're going to be joined by Danny himself, along with his good friend, Jim Raquel. And Jim was one of the top judges in the IFBB for many years. Jim owns a gym out in Rochester, New York, where Danny's from, and he's been good friends with Danny for probably 40-plus years. So we had both of them on the show, and we're going to have a really great interview. We got to talk to Danny not only about the 1981 Mr. Olympia, but also about his career, because I never had a chance to interview Danny before, and it was a real honor for me to talk to him. I grew up reading about Danny. He got his start pretty much with the IFBB in 1975, and he had a great career, and I think he hit his absolute peak in 1981. So he's a great guy, great personality. He's got some real funny stories. So you're going to really love this interview. All right. I want to thank our sponsors, Redcon One, for sponsoring the show. With Redcon One, everybody wants to be a champion and everyone wants to be the best. But Redcon One, they believe in working hard at achieving your goals. Whether you're killing it in the gym or you're running a 6-minute mile, Redcon One has something for those willing to put in the work. They have a premium clinically dosed pre-workout called Total War that is the perfect companion to your workout to give you that extra push to break through your mental and physical barriers. And then after the workout, you can fuel your body with the revolutionary MRE. It is the only whole food complete meal replacement, and it has protein coming from salmon, chicken, beef, and eggs, and complex carbs coming from sweet potatoes and oats, and it also contains 10 grams of fat from MCT oil. This is the best tasting complete meal you will ever have. So go to redcon1.com and try the very best that sports nutrition has to offer. Redcon One, the highest state of readiness. And as a tribute to the show, you can enter the discount code LEGENDS and get 15% off, 15% discount off your order. And we're also brought to you by Balanced Body Labs. If you're working hard to achieve your physical best, you need the optimum level of nutrients to reach your peak performance. When your nutrients go missing, so does your ability to have a productive day. At Balanced Body Labs, they have an easy-to-use at-home test kit to help you detect your nutrient levels. They offer three different categories of tests, one for endurance athletes, one for those training for a competition, and one for those trying to lose weight. So you just choose which test you're going to take, then you take the sample test at home, you mail the test kit back, and then you log on for your results. They will test for your vitamin levels, your amino acids, your testosterone levels, your cortisol levels, and your lactic acid levels. No more having to go to a doctor's office and going through a painful blood test. If you don't know what your nutrient levels are, you won't be able to perform at your optimum levels. Balanced Body Labs will get you there. Just log on to balancedbodylabs.com and sign up for your easy-to-use at-home testing kit today. All right, this is a big weekend in the bodybuilding world because the Mr. Olympia is taking place this weekend out in Las Vegas, the 2017 Mr. Olympia, along with all the other divisions, figure, fitness, bikini, classic physique, men's physique. Last night, we were recording the show on Saturday, so the finals are going to be tonight, but I watched the prejudging last night. It's on Amazon.com, and I got a really good idea of who's going to place where, and they did have the results of the classic physique, and I want to mention that Old School Labs' Breon Ansley himself, who I think was third place or fourth place last year, Breon came through and won first place. So congratulations to Breon Ansley and to Old School Labs, our sponsor. And Breon looked fantastic. And Chris Bumstead from Canada was in second place. Chris also looked amazing. Great legs, real small waist, great vacuum. I could see Chris winning this division also. George Peterson from New York, who won the very first Classic Physique Nationals last year. George came in really, really good also. He came in really ripped. He's got an incredible back. Arash Rabar from New York, who also placed very high last year. Many people thought he could have won it. He was in fourth place. He's got a great physique. And then Danny Hester, who was last year's winner in the Classic Physique Olympia, Danny took fifth place. So he dropped, but many people were expecting that. And as some of the commentators were saying, they could see that this division could have a different winner every year. It's really, really got a lot of potential. And it's kind of bringing back bodybuilding, what it used to be, the classic days of bodybuilding. All these guys have very, very small waist. They have really, really great posing routines. They're all ripped. They were all in top condition. So I'm really excited. This is only the second year they've had this division in the Olympia. So I see this thing really taking off and maybe even taking over bodybuilding in the next 3 to 5 years. And there's so much new talent coming up. A lot of these young guys like Breon Ansley, Chris Bumstead, and also Terrence Ruffin. I want to mention him. Terrence is amazing. He's from the Florida area. I think he just moved, actually, but he used to be from the Florida area. I've interviewed him a couple times. And Terrence has got a great physique, and he's a really big fan of old school bodybuilding. I know he listens to all my podcasts and he listens to all my interviews. So Terrence is really going to move up also. I think, can't remember where he was last year, 8th or 9th, but he moved up to 6th this year. And I see him being in the top 3 next year because they can't deny this guy much longer. He's got a great physique. So there's some really great talent coming in this. There's going to be a lot of new guys coming up that we don't even know about yet. So it's going to be a really great division. Some of the other divisions, Cindy Gillen, who was also from Florida, won the Figure Olympia, and this was her first win. She beat out LaToya Watts, who I think has won the title a couple times. And both of these girls have amazing, amazing physiques. Super small waist. I could have seen LaToya win it again. But Sydney was also a really fantastic competitor, fantastic physique. So congratulations to her. Oksana Grishina won her last Fitness Olympia title. She is now retiring. She's going out on top. She was an amazing competitor. I think she won 6 Figure Olympia titles, and she also won the Arnold Classic many times. And then they had the judging for the 212 division. James Flex Lewis, also from the Florida area, he looks like he's going to win again. I think this is going to be his 6th time. But James was not at his best. But he still, I think, with just his great genetics and stuff, he's probably got enough to win again. And then the guy from the Middle East won the Arnold Classic this year. He looks like he's going to take 2nd. He's got an incredible upper body. And my friend Jose Raymond is right in the mix, too. He looks like he's going to place 3rd. So we will see the results of that tonight. And then in the Mr. Olympia contest, it looks like Phil Heath is going to win his 7th title, and he will tie Arnold Schwarzenegger's record for 7 overall Mr. Olympia wins. Phil is in great condition, as he was last year. He had a lot of confidence on stage, but he was really pushed this time by Big Ramy. And Ramy has all the potential in the world. We've been waiting for this guy to hit his peak. And I think he really came in his best condition ever. So it's a 2-day show, and the finals are going to be tonight on Saturday. So we're going to see what happens. I don't think Rami's going to beat Phil Heath, but he definitely made it close. And he's got the potential to do it. So this is going to give him a lot of confidence. I think Rami's going to be in 2nd place. But William Bonick is also right there, and he's definitely in the top 3. They were calling these guys out at the final comparison of the prejudging, and they were all switching them around. They had Phil in the middle at first, then they put Big Ramy in the middle, and then William Bonick. It's going to be really, really close. And William Bonick is in amazing condition. This guy is super dense, super thick, and really in great condition. I could see him in 2nd place, too. So it's going to be really interesting. But that was definitely the top 3. And then with some of the other competitors, looks like Dexter Jackson, Mr. Reliable, he's going to be in about the 4th place position. Sean Roden was off this year. He came in bigger, I guess, to challenge Phil for the title, but he was definitely off condition. And I see him dropping down to 6th. He is not going to be in that top 2nd or 3rd spot like he has been in the last 4 years. Brandon Curry really surprised everybody. He came in great condition. He's much bigger than he used to be. I got him in 5th place. And then Nathan D'Ascia from England, from the United Kingdom, I got him in like the 7th place position. I think it's going to be battling it out with Sean Roden for that top 6th spot. And then after that, it looks like Raleigh Winkler is going to be in 8th. And Josh Leonardowitz from Australia, who just won the Tampa Pro, I got him in 9th place. He looks pretty good. I thought he'd come in a little better, but he, of course, went through that thing where he found Dallas McCarver and that he was living with him. So that was a tragedy. But Josh did come through and he did represent. And Cedric McMillan was a big disappointment for me. I was hoping Cedric was going to be in that top 3. but he didn't look anything like he did at the Arnold. He was definitely off. So unfortunately, Cedric, again, all the potential in the world, I think he can unseat Phil Heath, but he just never seems to peak for the Olympia. I don't know why. All right, I want to mention a couple shout-outs here. I've been getting some emails about the show, so I want to mention these people. One was Eric Burke. Eric wrote to us, and he said, "Hi, John, I'm loving your show. I watch the episodes before my training sessions in the morning, powerful motivators, and I'm wondering when part two of the Dorian and Samir interviews will be posted." Well, we are supposed to talk to Samir Banute this week. He is at the Olympia, of course, so hopefully we'll get to talk to him this week. And Samir is going to join us for the podcast because he was at the 1981 Mr. Olympia, so I want to get his views on what went on there. Samir is also going to do my video interview. We did part one of the video interview a couple of years ago, so I want to do part two with him because we have to finish that up. So he promised that he would do both this coming week. We're also supposed to talk to Roy Callender this week, and Roy was another competitor who was in the 1981 Mr. Olympia. Roy has done a video interview with me where we talked about his whole career, but he said he would join me again for the podcast to talk about 1981 Olympia. We're also going to be talking this week, I think, to Gary Bartlett. And Gary is a top photographer in the bodybuilding world. He used to work for Muscle Mag International for Bob Kennedy. He's still in Canada, and he is at the Olympia also this weekend. And Gary was at the 1981 Olympia also. So we're going to talk to Gary and talk about his long, extensive career in the industry and also his views on the 1981 Olympia. I also got an email from Terry Strand, and Terry is an old friend of mine from Chicago. He's an old school bodybuilder. He's good friends with Bob Gaida. He was good friends with the late, great Sergio Oliva before he passed away. And he wrote me an email and he said, "As usual, John Hansen conducts the best interviews on the internet by asking pertinent questions, making intelligent comments, and then standing back and allowing the interviewee to speak until he is done speaking rather than interrupting. John Balik was, as all these guys are, a very informed and interesting iron leader. Sadly, Rich Piana was another very articulate champ who I'd have loved to hear interviewed by John. Piana was a one of the kind among all the other 300-pound guys who now populate many gyms across America." So I'm glad Terry liked that interview with John Balik. I hope all you guys like that. And I heard from another guy, Micah Baxt. Micah says, "Greetings, John. I know you from the former Iron Age forum run by Sean Perrine. Sean is now the editor-in-chief of Muscle and Fitness magazine. And about 15 years ago, I think it was the early 2000s, Sean started this website called Iron Age. I used to go on there all the time because we would talk about the good old days of bodybuilding, classic bodybuilding. I met Sean on there, and I met Peter McGuff. He used to go on there a lot. So it was a great site. It's no longer around. But he said he knows me from that site, and he says, your physique looks great in your photos. Is there any chance you might be able to interview Frank Zane? I was curious to know what he thought of Chris Dickerson and Samir's physique, as well as the Night of the Champions winner, Phil Hill." So, yeah, I definitely want to interview Frank Zane. I think that would be an amazing interview. So I'm going to be contacting Frank soon. I know he's probably at the Mr. Olympia this weekend also. So he's still out in Palm Springs, California. So yes, I'm going to make an attempt to contact Frank, and hopefully we could do an extensive interview about his whole career. I think Frank would be an amazing interview. I think that would be probably one of the best. All right, and then I got another email from a guy named Craig Hartglass. He says, "Hi, John. I'm just now listening to your interview with John Balik, and I had to pause it a second to let you know how much I enjoy your interviews. I've been reading to write a while, but it never seemed to get around to it. Like you, I was an enormous fan in spirit, not mass, back in the 70s. And even through the 90s, and I wanted to let you know how much of a thrill it is to have these lost times brought back to life. But I also wanted to let you know how much I appreciate all the work and preparation you put in. It's incredible how you take these guys through their careers, contest by contest, allowing the great stories to emerge organically and gently nudging them back on track after allowing long and often revealing tangents. Your prep and professionalism really stand out. I look forward to seeing and listening to more great interviews over the next years. I wanted to thank you for the massive effort and let you know that I, and I'm sure many of us, really appreciate it. Anyway, I've gone on long enough. Thanks, and keep up the great work." And then he says, "P.S., I really enjoy the training and nutrition bits. I know it may not be as interesting as their career highlights and all, especially when a long-admired pro tells about the moment of discovery that changed their physique and outlook seemingly overnight. I'm thinking specifically Gaspari explaining how he needed more carbs and calories and Dorian explaining how he came to realize that each time he increased volume or frequency, he would begin to shrink and get weaker. I am partial to this, I suppose, because I did not figure out my own body until I was about 30, having started training at 14. And when I did, the changes came almost overnight. Suddenly, people were telling me I had such great genetics. All right. So thanks to Craig Hartclass from Connecticut. I appreciate all those compliments, Craig. And I appreciate all your emails. So keep those emails coming in. I appreciate all you guys' comments and what you have to say about the show. And I'm glad you're enjoying it. I'm really enjoying doing it. So go to bodybuildinglegendshow.com and you can see all my video interviews. I have about, like I said, 22, 23 interviews up there right now. You can check those out as well as listening every week to the podcast. And as far as the Dorian Yates Part 2 interview, I want to address that because I'm getting a lot of emails about that. I guess some of the video clips that I've used on there, which were from the original Joe Weider videos, I think some of those rights were bought out by London Real, who did a series of interviews with Dorian. So every time I try to post that second part of my interview with Dorian, it keeps getting blocked from them. So I'm just keeping making the adjustments, and I'm taking out the part that they have the rights to, and hopefully we'll get it up in the next month. And we've also got an interview coming up with Mike Ashley, so that video interview should be up pretty soon also. We did that about a week ago, so that should be coming up in the next couple of weeks, so look forward to that. All right, we're also brought to you by Old School Labs. With so many supplements on the market, it can be hard to know which brand is the right one. As a three-time Natural Mr. Universe and Natural Mr. Olympia myself, the quality of supplements and knowing what I'm taking is very important to me, which is why Old School Labs is giving you 12% off your purchase. Go to oldschoollabs.com and use the code LEGEND12 to get 12% off your purchase at your checkout. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's the brand that I personally use to win and place high in the Masters and many other competitions. I use the Vintage Base and Vintage Burn every morning as a part of my regular supplement regime. And I also use the Vintage Build and Vintage Blast for my pre-workout drink. So Old School Labs is a brand you can trust, and it values the golden era of bodybuilding. And Breon Ansley, as I mentioned before, is represented by Old School Labs. Breon was the winner this year of the Olympia Classic Physique Divisions. Breon has got a great physique, and we look forward to seeing him win more Olympias. He is represented by Old School Labs, along with Sergio Oliva Jr. So go to oldschoollabs.com. It's the brand you can trust, and it values the golden era of bodybuilding. For great results, keep it old school. And we're also brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services to ensure that you will not only look and feel amazing, but be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. They also offer very competitive pricing along with their quality products and services. Those are just a few additional reasons to give them a call. So call them for more information and experience firsthand what sets them apart from the rest. Go to their website, flalternativemed.com, and use the promotion code LEGEND for a free consultation, and you'll get 20% off all packages. That's Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, I want to thank all of our sponsors and thank you guys again for tuning in. And here is a really entertaining interview with Danny Padilla and Jim Rockel, where we talk about the 1981 Mr. Olympia. All right, welcome to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And my special guest this week, we have two guests on the line, Jim Rockel, who was an IFBB judge for many, many years. And he's also good friends with the great bodybuilder Danny Padilla. And both Jim and Danny are on the line with us. Hey, guys, thanks for joining us.
How you doing? It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. Pleasure to have you guys. Well, Jim, let's start with you, if we could, real quick. Were you a judge at the 1981 Olympia? I know you and Danny are really good friends, and you judged for many years. Were you a judge at that show?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't a pro judge at that time.
Okay. So you were just at the show, and were you there with Danny?
No, Danny was with who? Who were you with? I was with just a bunch of guys from the area. I think Pete Procopio there, Larry Baker.
Well, Danny, let's talk a little bit about your career. I know we're going to talk about the 81 Olympia. which you were a big part of. But when you started with the IFBB, I believe that was around 1975, you were pretty much a big hit right off the start, right? Because you won the Mr. USA that year, and Joe Weider started featuring you in the magazines right off the bat.
Yeah, it was a blessing, because what had happened was I competed in the AAU for many years, and I did a couple shows, and then basically one day they said to me, listen, you're a good guy, you got a great physique, but you're too little, you're never going to make it in bodybuilding. And John Balick at the time was a photographer at the time. He's beginning his career, and he said to me, wow, you know, you got a great physique. I hope you're not going to give it up. If I was you, I'd look in the direction of the IFBB.
Okay.
So I set my guns in that direction, and my first show, believe it or not, was in Madison Square Garden, Mr. USA, and all the greats were there.
Yeah. Yeah, and then right off, I started bodybuilding right around that time, Danny, and I remember you were in the magazines, and they were saying how great you were, and, you know, that you had all the potential in the world.
Yeah, I was lucky, because at 5'2", you know, you just don't, it's hard. And I was blessed in the sense of, I knew I couldn't out-muscle every guy, but I could out-purdy him. So I believed in working the whole body, so from the ankles right up.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I would get on stage, you could never tell my height until I was next to somebody.
Right.
You could never guess my height.
And then later that year, Danny, you were chosen to go to Pretoria, South Africa, correct, to compete in the Mr. Universe.
Yeah, well, that was another, listen, I call it the Trail of Tears for me. Because, you know, legally, I was the lightweight representation for Mr. Universe. Legally,
right.
I in that show because I won the USA. And Joe Weider flew me to L.A. and, believe it or not, I did some pump and iron video. In fact, that was where I first saw Mike Mentzer. He's in the background. A lot of people don't know that, but he was there.
Mm-hmm.
And all trained and got ready for the show. We flew to Africa a week before the show. And then the morning of the show, I was told that I wasn't going to compete. And I was devastated. I couldn't believe it. I ate breakfast. I went to get on the bus. They said, listen, you're not going to be allowed to compete. I said, well, what's this about? And nobody would explain anything to me. And then, of course, I went to Ben, and he was like, you know, he had no answer. He was upset. I was upset. I wanted to choke him, so they had to drag me away. And I'm sitting there with Oscar State at the doorway, and he's saying to me, aren't you going to compete? And I said, well, America doesn't want me on their team after they chose me. And so Oscar State said, well, you know, what do you mean they don't want you? I said, well, aren't you part of this? He goes, no, I don't know what you're talking about. You're on the chart. You have to be on that. And they did. So a guy from Portugal, a coach, was walking by, and he said to me, are you not? I said, nobody wants me. He says, we'll take it. We don't have a lightweight. So Oscar says to me, I don't know how we could do this. He says, where was your, you know, parents? I said, well, my dad was born in Spain. My mother was in Puerto Rico, and he had to cross through Portugal to get there, right? So he said, before that dumb, we're going to let you in. And if you look at photos, I'm carrying the banner for Portugal.
Really? Wow.
So now Arnold and the guys are laughing their head off. They're looking. They say, how the hell did he get it? And the funny thing about it was, it wasn't until years later, because I was blaming poor Ed Jubenville.
Uh-huh.
And because, you know, he was the coach for us, and at that time we had Ken Waller, myself in the light, and Robbie in the middle. So it would have been the sport. We would have been the first team ever to win all three divisions.
Right.
Mike Katz and Ken Waller, and so they put two heavyweights. And the process was supposed to be that he would and Waller would pose down, and they would pick one of them. Instead, they put them both in, and what I was told 20 years later was that it was possibly Butler from Pump and Iron who said, why not put the two heavyweights and let's get rid of Danny because he's young and he's good and he can come back next year. So I got on Portugal's team, and basically I was winning. I would have won the universe.
Yeah.
And they stopped the show and they stripped me again. I was kicked out.
So were you actually in the prejudging then, Danny? Or did you get up there and you were posing?
I won round one, round two, Al's going to be Mr. Universe. And then I think New England protested. They had to stop, and they stripped me.
Yeah. The eventual winner of the short fest, he came from England, right, Will Sylvester?
Yeah, you got it. Going to get beat that night. So it's the story of my life.
Yeah, I always wondered what happened with that, because I remember you were at the in the movie Pumping Iron, where you guys were talking about Ed Corney and Franco posing.
Yeah, I was in the whole movie, and then a lot of it was taken out because it was an embarrassment to the IFBB. They were not. They can't show it. If I could get the original cut, what a lot of fun I would have.
Well, you had a fantastic career. You won the took first in your short class in the Mr. America in '76, and then you ended up winning the Mr. America, beating out Roger Callard and Pete Grubkowski in '77, and then you won the Universe that year, right?
That was another trail of tears. After I had won the show, there was a little protest, you know, because, you know, they were upset that Roger didn't win.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was in the shower. I had to come back out and pose again.
Really? You had to pose again?
I had to pose again. I had soap in my hair. That story never got out either, but it was true.
Who was protesting that?
I think Roger, and I think at the time he had Arnold pushing for him because he was Arnold's training partner. They were kind of trying to nudge, and I was elected again, Mr. America. You know, Frank Zane, the guy said, nah, he's the winner. We're not taking him off.
Zane was a judge there?
I think Zane, I'm trying to remember, Franco, who ran the show, was a judge. And somebody, I forget who the judges were, but they couldn't take me out.
Let me ask you about that Universe, too, Danny, because you went in '76 when it was in Montreal, and you were surprised, Muhammad McAway. What did you think of him? He shocked everybody that year, huh?
McAway was a tremendous bodybuilder. He had a tremendous upper body, but very weak legs. He just never had legs. And he caught me. I was heavy. You know, he was muscular. I was huge. The crowd wanted me to win because I was so big. I overshadowed him like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
But he won the show. And I, you know, deservingly, he was cut. He looked very good. I was huge, smooth. And based on, during that era, you know, guys that were big and round were winning. You didn't have to be really cut.
Mm-hmm.
He came in looking pretty cut, and he won the show. And I wasn't surprised by it. I mean, I thought he was pretty good, and the fact that he won didn't shock me at all.
But then you came back in '77, and then you beat him there.
Crushed him there. And in that universe, that was another trail of tears. At the time, me and Cal Skellig flew from L.A. to New York. There was some people, and we won the berth to go to the universe. And when we finished that show, we were supposed to go to the airport and fly to Europe, and there was no airline ticket. So we're at the airport with no ticket, and we're calling calling the promoter of the show, and then he said, well, you got to call the IFBB because they're supposed to supply the ticket. We called Ben and them, and they said, well, they're supposed to supply the ticket. So we were there we lost the day sitting in the airport. We said we're going to get a lawyer and sue. All of a sudden, a ticket showed up. We got a ticket to go to Europe. We get to, I believe it was England, and then there was an airline strike. So we were stuck at the airport.
Damn.
So we spent like 3-4 days flying while everybody was already over in France. Then there was another strike. We were able to somehow get on the plane. We finally got to France. We didn't have a room to go into, so we had to go find out what the hell was going on there. And then we had to go to a meeting. It was a long process. So me and Cal Skellig went 3 or 4 days hardly eating, okay? I mean, it was the funniest thing ever. In fact, in France, you know, we weren't able to shower, so I'm sitting in the sink half nude trying to wash myself, walking in the bathroom crying with laughter. And then, of course, the system there said, hey, you can't be doing this. You got to get dressed. And they said, who the hell are you? We told them who we were. So they got us on a plane and got us over to Nice. And then another shock win because I beat McCauley. That was shocking. And then, of course, Kelly, he beat Mike Mencher, which was, you know, everybody thought Mike was going to win that night. He got beat.
So Mike wasn't in the airport with you guys, huh? Did he get flown out separately?
He was there prepped like he won the show.
How'd you get along with Cal? He was always a favorite bodybuilder of mine when I was growing up, and I thought it was great when he beat Mencher in that universe because it was such an upset.
I got along with everybody, but I helped Cal Skellig maintain and fight for the right because, you know, it was tough what we went through. We were helping each other, and Mike was one of my best friends back then. good friend of mine. So it was like, I was all about the time, you know, I got to stay in shape. So we barely ate, you know, we were on low carbs. And then that fact, we got in, finally we got to our room Thursday, Friday was, we had to get ready to get ready for the show. So we were walking around and doing jogging to make sure. And then there was the weigh-in. And in fact, when I got weighed in that morning, I talked to McCauley. He came over, you know, said to me, you want chocolate? And I said, no, I'm okay. And I was eating peanut butter and jelly. He says to me, should you be eating that? Aren't you afraid? I said, champions can eat anything they want. I'm not worried about it. So then it was funny because they made you strip to weigh yourself back then.
Uh-huh.
Sat on the scale. And with my outfit on, I weighed 163. They made me strip. They said, no, everybody has to be in there. They made us, you know, strip. It is basically to look at the guys. So yeah. When I got on, weighed in again, they said, weigh him again because he's too big to weigh 162. They didn't believe that I weighed 162. Bodybuilding's always been rough on me. Nothing easy.
Hey, Jim, let me bring you into this. You and Danny have been friends, you said, for like 40 years. How did you meet Danny, and did you think he had the potential right when you saw him?
Oh, yeah. Danny was, by the time I got involved with everything, Danny was already a household name around here in Rochester.
Okay.
Training at the YMCA and then training at the Turner's Club and eventually coming over to my place when I opened up in 1977.
Okay. So what did you think when you first saw Danny?
Well, impressive as hell, let's put it that way. Danny, in my opinion, has always had probably the best body of all time in terms of symmetrical balance and proportions, and even with muscle size on that particular frame. He's got no weaknesses, and I can't think of any other bodybuilder that I've ever judged or seen that has had no weaknesses. And you know I've judged and had judged all of the top guys, so.
And what was great about that golden era of bodybuilding back in the 70s and even the 80s, was it seems like the judging appreciated people who were symmetrical and who had great physiques, no matter how tall they were or no matter how big they were, where it seems like, you know, over the last few decades, it's morphed into, you know, just how big you are. And if you're not a certain size, you get overlooked. Where there was a lot of great physiques in the 70s and 80s who were appreciated for their symmetry and their size and for their proportions.
Exactly. Today, it's gone the way of the transformer, as I call it. It's just terrible. I don't like to look at all.
Yeah.
I don't care for those extensions in the stomach and all the oil that's being used by these guys, all the insulin they're using and all this other stuff. They're all risking their lives.
Danny, when you were around back then in the 70s and you went to Gold's Gym and you said you got along with everybody, what was everybody's feeling about your physique? Did everybody tell you that you had a great physique and that you could win it all?
Here's the thing back then. Nobody would say anything to you because they were afraid of you. They were smart. But the only thing I liked about the guys back then, whether they liked you or not, if you had issues, they would help you. You know, they would try to help. It was like a union. You know, nobody would say, hey, Dan, if this thing could be great, because I was a fear factor. They were afraid of me, believe
mm-hmm.
it or not.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of beat by a midget like Dennis Tenorino, God bless his soul, he was so pissed off that I beat him when they wanted to kill me. And they was like, how can this guy beat me? But the reality is, you know, I used to weigh a lot. At my final show, I weighed 245 the night of the champions at 5'2". But my weight went from 165 all the way up to 245. But it was, you know, it took years to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Today, it's a different story. The guys go from 200 to 300 to get back down to 200. I'll never understand that type of bodybuilding. Crazy now, but it's a new era. Remember, when Elvis Presley first came out, he was the devil. I try not to be judgmental, but it's like today, back in the day, you know, guys want a 1961 Vette, they want a 55 Chevy, because those are the car. I don't like the new cars. To me, the guys, it's so overwhelming. I don't see them very athletic. I don't see anybody doing great posing routines, and part of this thing was entertainment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So a guy walking, not barely walking, breathing, falling or fainting before prejudging, to me, is not entertainment. The other thing I don't like is you can't have 30 of the best bodybuilders in the world. You got to have 10. That should be a powerful Mr. Olympia. You got too many bodies up there now.
Right.
How long? Posing routine. They don't pose, you know. So it's gotten pretty boring.
Let me jump in on that, John, and I'll be judgmental, okay?
Okay.
You know, because you know where I've been sitting for many years. As a head judge, I used to have to pace myself when these guys were up there because they could never go through two sessions of turns or posing. They'd be all winded. And I'm going to ask you, what kind of an athlete is that? They can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that to me was, as Danny said, that's one of the worst things that that exists. And they don't pose. You know, they point at the audience and throw them by, walk over to the other side of the stage, you know, turn their ear or whatever they're going to do with that, and think they're going to get some kind of applause. I mean, it's ridiculous. The guys of Danny's era appreciated what bodybuilding was all about and what it should be about. Not about this huge size and the mass monsters and who's going to be the first guy to be on stage at 300 pounds in the Olympia. Who cares?
And like you said, Jim, the posing was so important back then. I remember, you know, I was competing back in the 80s also, and I remember everybody then, all the competitors, we spent so much time on our posing routine for months before a contest because it was just required of everybody. You know, everybody had a – if you weren't a good poser, I think you were looked down on back then.
Oh, exactly. And Danny, one of Danny's good friends was Ed Corney, and I used to love watching Eddie pose, and he was magnificent, and everything was fine. And you could tell he spent time on it. He had a great body. You know, he was older than most of the other guys, but he definitely performed well.
Mm-hmm.
And then being a professional, you got a guy like Frank Zane who could come out and stand on that stage, and you knew he was the winner. He didn't have to move.
Yeah.
Never broke the pose, and he was a professional. And that's what these guys were all about, and they understood what bodybuilding was about. Not about that anymore.
Hey, Danny, talk a little bit about your time in Southern California. Was the first time you went out there, was that 1975?
Yeah, 1975 was the first time I went out there. And at the time, when I went out there, you had the original Gold's Gym. 6 months to a year later, they sold it. But I got to see the original Gold's Gym, you know, and all the guys that were out there. And at the time, it was Franco, who had a tremendous physique. And all my heroes were there. I got to see Dave Draper, Larry Scott, Robbie, Arnold, and Ken Waller. It was like a dream come true. It was dreams I ever had. All of a sudden, I was there. So it was incredible.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because I would think you would be reading about all those guys in the magazines, right, when you were starting out. So it had to be a great experience just hanging out with them and working out. And the camaraderie looked so great back then.
Well, you know what? It was true because it was. The guys all got along. I mean, once in a while you had an argument, but the only time it got a little rough was right before a show. And even then it wasn't fun, you know. I'm going to beat you. Better get ready. Or, you know, Arnold would bust your balls and say, are you getting ready for the show? Because it must be the next show because your diet ain't working too good.
Right. And,
but we still had fun. It was cool. You know, once in a while, but they were under control. Today, the guys don't even want to talk to you.
Yeah.
I feel sorry for the public. You know, to me, bodybuilding back then was, you had three rounds. You know, there was the symmetry rounds. There was the rounds where the judges had to look at you. And then there was the display of the body. You had to be able to play a body, so you had to be a functioning athlete in your own kind of way. And if you couldn't go from pose to pose, then basically, you know, you got beat sometimes. You might have had a muscular body, but if you couldn't display it, it was held against you. Today, it's like Jimmy said, they don't really pose. They do one shot, walk over, you know, hold their breath. They can make another shot, walk over to do another shot. And so it's kind of boring, you know. Kind of boring. And again, let me repeat myself. I just think back then you had 10, 15 of the best bodies in the world, and you got it down to 10 guys. And if you had 10 real good guys who had good posing routines, it was a long show. I can't imagine 20, 25, 30. That's crazy.
Also, what you just said about the different rounds, I think that's important too. I just did an interview a couple weeks ago with Dorian Yates, and he was saying how each round was important. So that meant your symmetry round was really important, and then the posing round was also judged. So you had three different rounds. It wasn't just the muscularity round. So that's why a bodybuilder like Frank Zane or yourself or Samir Banud could do so well in the symmetry round, and the posing round was also very important. And that's a round where someone like Zane came alive because he may not have looked as good in the mandatories, but he looked great in the posing round. So it's important that all those three rounds were really judged.
Exactly. And you know what the difference was? Guys like Zane, myself, Arnold, Franco, we could hold a shot and make it look easy. We were dying, but we made it look easy, very professional. These guys can't hold their shots. I don't blame them because when you weigh 350 pounds, you know, you got to get tired. But these guys can't hold their shots. Can't get a real good comparison.
So, Danny, when you started your pro career in 1978, tell us a little bit about competing in the Olympia in like 78, 79 when it was in Columbus, Ohio, and Zane won both of those shows. What were your memories from back then?
Well, see, for me, I always felt like if I was able to win the universe in 1975 like I should have, I would have gotten to the Olympia, you know, earlier. So it would have gave me more time to mature into the sport. And so, you know, when you first get in there, you see the best, the real best bodybuilders in the world. And it's a little rough, you know, because you got to get used to it. Think about it. An amateur boxer going against the best boxer in the world.
Yeah.
And so you got to take your punches like a man. So you make mistakes. You overtrain, you know, you overdiet because you're trying to fit into this. And it was a learning experience. For me, I caught on pretty fast, but I got to see the best bodybuilders in the world. And it was great information to see how they pumped up, what they were eating during prejudging. So you learned a lot. You learned a lot about yourself, and then you also learned a lot about the other guys so that you could create a program that was going to fit you and help you do better for your next show.
What did you think of Zane when he won those shows, 78 and 79?
Zane, when you stood next to Zane outside, you say, how the hell can this guy be Mr. Olympia? But when you stage, the guy's timing was perfect, number one. Number two, he only did 12 poses. But they were the 12 best pulses you ever see on earth. And he would hold them, and he was cut perfectly. And so he could fool you. I call him the magician.
Yeah.
When you saw him live, you say there's no way this guy's Mr. Olympia. But he just did his job, and he did it well. He was a magician. He was a phenomenal poser. His timing was perfect. 2 days after the show, you couldn't believe this guy won the Olympia.
Wow. Yeah, that's what I heard about him. He peaked perfectly on that day, but if you saw him a couple of weeks or a couple of months before, you would never believe he was going to even go in the contest.
And John, I can attest to that, too, because I saw three of his victories, and he stood there, and it was over. I mean, the guy didn't have to move. He knew every position of his body, and he knew it, you know, to perfection. And like Danny says, he never showed any bad parts because he was the magician. He was able to hide it all.
Yeah.
So he wasn't the biggest guy out there at 180 pounds, but definitely put it together and knew where he was at all times. I mean, he had a great focus and true champion of the era and, you know, still of today. He's still a great guy.
Yeah. That's what I try to explain to some of these kids, especially if you get on these message boards and they're all like, he's a swimmer and he never deserved to win. I'm like, you know, like you, Jim, I saw all three of his wins. And I believe he won every one, you know. I mean, you just had to see him on stage to appreciate him.
Yep. See, you got to understand that these guys are comparing past and present, and you can't do that. Like boxer, you can't do that. For that time, he was phenomenal. So we're considered not that good compared to. But, again, I'll say the aesthetic of the physique was better. The show was better. And the guys gave you a good performance. Today, I don't see that. For every guy that said today, 10 don't. If they don't faint on you, like Jimmy said, they're gasping to do a shot. They can't do five poses in a row. I mean, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what's in style. I mean, I respect everyone, you know, in the sense of, you know, sport-wise, but it doesn't mean I have to like it.
Hey, Danny, one of the shows I wanted to ask you about before we talk about the Olympia is that Night of the Champions in 79. When you received that perfect 300 score, but ended up taking second to Robbie.
What a joke. That show was the funniest ever because I had been doing a little bit of exhibitions, and I got back to L.A., and I got to Gold's Gym, and there was Joe Weider with Mike Mentzer and Robbie. They were doing a photo shoot.
Okay.
Joe Weider said to me, Donnie, are you going to honor the show? I go, yeah. He goes, you'll never make it. You only got 21 days. So Bobby looked at Joe and said, please, don't get this guy going because he's shaped just to show you up.
Right.
And So I said, oh, my God, I got to get in shape for the show. And at the time, Casey and Mike Mentzer had received a 300 score, you know, perfect score.
Yeah.
All of a sudden. So I starved myself, you know. I had an egg for breakfast, a piece of fried chicken with salad for lunch, a piece of fried chicken for dinner, and lots of water, and starved. Got in pretty good shape for that show. And so I'm on the plane, and there's Joe Weider sitting next to me. And 3 days before the show, Joe had said, is there any way we could do a photo shot? And I said, yeah, I guess. And that's where you see me in the shorts, and the legs were ripped. Mm-hmm. The hair, you know, hanging. I had the long hair at the time before I got a haircut. I was in tremendous shape.
Yeah, you were.
I was in pretty good shape. So I get on a plane with Joe Weider, and the guys are on there. And Joe Weider says, aren't you going to eat it? I go, nah, I'm going to have a Snickers bar. And Joe's like, are you crazy? You're getting ready for the show? I said, Joe, it doesn't matter. I'm in great shape. So I eat a Snickers bar in front of Joe just to piss him off. And so now we get to the show, and the first thing we do is we have a meeting. And they say to us, look, this is the first time we're ever going to do a pose down. We've never done a pose down before. He said, but this is for entertainment only. This has got nothing to do with judging the show.
Okay.
So that's what we were told. So that night, I decided to pose as a record Short People.
Right.
Right?
Randy Newman.
I got out there, and I posed as Short People, and the audience went nuts. I had to come out twice because they went nuts. They gave me a standing ovation.
Wow.
Right after me was Ed Corney, who I forget, he's one of the best posers ever. And then right after that, poor Mike had to go out. He said, do I really want to come out after you two guys? And Mike wasn't in that shape. Robbie was in great shape, but again, I thought his legs were weak.
Mm-hmm.
So now, every round I got 300, I got 20. So I had, said, hell, I'm the winner. So now they said, okay, there's going to be a pose down between you guys. And so we pose down once, I do it. We pose down again, I do it. We pose down the third time, I do it. The fourth time, I said, you know what, screw this, I ain't coming out. And so they used that as an excuse to give Robbie the show and say that I lost because I didn't pose down the way I should have. When you told me at the meeting that the pose down had nothing to do with the judge.
Right, entertainment.
Again, I believe I took a good screwing on that one, too. Thank God I didn't take it serious. I might have committed suicide. Work for a living. I always said bodybuilding is fun. I want to be the greatest ever, but I'm not going to take it to the point where I'm going to kill people around me because my whole life can't be that.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of fun for me. And then, of course, they printed some stupid article that I laid back. And the reality was it was contract time. I refused to sign a contract. And I said, let's wait till after the show, because I thought I had negotiating power. All of a sudden, I had no power. So that's what truly happened.
Wow. Hey, Danny, let me ask you about the 80 Olympia, because that was also, in addition to the 81, that was one of the most controversial Olympias ever. And, of course, Arnold won after only training for a couple months. But everybody who I talked to at that show, a lot of people say Danny was the one who was really in great shape, and they don't really talk about it much because you only got 10th place. How did you feel you looked in that contest?
You know what? It was such a controversial show. There was a lot of crazy stuff going on back then.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Mentzer had gotten on Merv Griffin and basically said, I'm better than Arnold because I scored a perfect score, and Arnold never did.
Hmm.
And what'd you do? That for you brought the tiger out of the cage.
Yeah.
So kind of semi-training, but I think at the time he had done Stay Hungry movie, and when they said that to him, he was so pissed off he started training twice a day. And then everybody was asking him, are you going to train? Are you getting ready for the Olympia? Then they came to me and said, Danny, you know Arnold, what do you think? I said, listen, why would he train twice a day? Common sense. You guys better get, because he's going to the Olympia. And he went. And you know what? The reality to me is this. Did he deserve to win? I thought there was enough there for Arnold to win because nobody was outstanding. And believe it or not, outstanding bodybuilder of that day was Ken, that guy Walker from Australia, who was huge and was cut. He wasn't ripped, but he was pretty big and cut, and he was the shocker to me.
Yeah.
Guy that might have. And, you know, for me, you know, you got to remember, Australia, big guys. That's who they wanted. So I got overlooked. And I was, if you cry about every show, then you start acting like all the bodybuilders. How many guys do you talk to say, I should have won the show, I got screwed? I don't do that. I look at the show, and my thought process is, what could I do to be better? And I said, well, I could have been better, but I know I got overlooked, and that's what happens in the game. So I'm not going to cry over it. But there was a lot of crap that went on after that show. Everybody hated everybody. The war began, and that started the issue for the next show. And all the guys were calling me saying, Danny, we're boycotting the 81 Olympia. We don't want you to go. And at the time, I said, well, look, I'm flying home, and I'm going to train for the show at home. Mm-hmm. And so I was at Raquel's new gym on Lyle Avenue. Nobody knew what I was doing. And I got ready for the show, and everybody kept saying, Dan, you can't do this. You know, I said, look, it'll be the only chance I get to compete against Franco, who at the time was my hero. He was one of the greatest elites. And I wanted to be able to stand next to him and be prepared. And I said, I don't care if they fix the show, if he wins or doesn't. I just want to be stood next to this guy and make a comparison. And as far as I'm concerned, I did my job. I didn't win. Some people say, oh, you were a little too light. Well, I wasn't light. I weighed 178. Everybody said, you weighed 150. I didn't. I was so shredded that every time I did a vacuum, my face would suck in, and mm-hmm. I looked normal, but I wasn't. But you didn't see the greatest shots. If you see the best shots of me in that show, I was in tremendous shape.
I'll interject. He should have won that show. The 81 Olympia was his.
Yeah. Now, Jim, he was training at your gym in preparation for that. So tell us your thoughts about, you know, when you were watching Danny train and he was getting ready for that contest all year.
Well, at that point in time, my gym was probably, 4 years old. I had seen Danny train before, but never with the kind of intensity that he was training for that show. And it was remarkable. He was double splitting. He was so intent on every exercise that he did. You know, I was watching him. I saw how he was working out. And it was just an unbelievable thing. I mean, he was as intense as you can get. And it just goes to prove you didn't need California and the California atmosphere to become as good as he was. Because yeah. He was even better in 81. I mean, if you really examine the photos from that particular show, this guy was up there with no flaws whatsoever. Didn't matter the weight, the size was there, the muscle density was there, the shape was there, the proportion was there. It was all there.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the other competitors. They all had weaknesses. And I know I can go over because I was there. I saw it. Unbelievable. Unbelievable intensity that's, you know, I don't think has ever been matched in this town. I know Pete Gronkowski would train for 3 to 4 hours, but never with the intensity that Danny put in the hour or an hour and a half that he would train. And just incredible. Twice a day, sometimes 3 times a day.
So, Danny, was your motivation just to stand on stage with Franco, or did you think you had a shot at winning it?
I had 2 motivations. First of all, I wanted to prove everybody wrong that you needed to consume. Everybody with this crap about 200 to 300 grams of protein, I said no. The other thing I proved everybody wrong was they used to say you can't do any aerobics because you'll shrink up and be nothing. Mm-hmm. And then number 3, you have to be in California to train to be any good. The only thing they proved that you had to be in California was the top 3 guys were from California. So that was the only difference. Mm-hmm. But like one of the judges was from Canada, and I asked him, listen, what was wrong with my body? He said, well, your hamstrings weren't big enough. I said, really? Well, Franco had 1 leg, so how did he beat me with, you know, so obviously this guy didn't know what he was talking about. Were my hamstrings huge? No. I'm 5'2". How big do you want my hamstrings? It was all about balance. And, for me, I look at photos, and there's a lot of photos that you can see like this because they kind of put them away. They didn't want you to see them. I thought if I'm not winning, I should be second, and it didn't work that way. I don't know how Franco won. To me, Chris Dickerson shouldn't have been second. Tommy had a tremendous physique, but it was, you know, huge legs, upper body was the best I'd ever seen it. And balance-wise for him, it was the best he's ever been balance-wise, but to me, it was still off. And there was guys like, I think his name, Walzlek. He could have been up there. He was pretty cut. And there was another guy, I forget his name. He was a black gentleman who looked tremendous. He was top. He could have been up there. So, flawed show, flawed judging. What are you going to do?
Yeah. What did you do different in your training that year, Danny? You said you had an aerobics. Did you ever do aerobics before? Because I know aerobics wasn't that popular back in the 70s.
I did a little bit of aerobics, but for that show, you know, what I did was ate tons of carbs.
Okay.
I would run 5 to 10 miles 3 times a week.
Okay.
I could run, I could do anything. So, and then as I got closer to the show, 6 to 8 weeks, I cut the aerobics down, switched the diet around a little bit. So I didn't believe in starvation to the last 14 days because it's no fun to train on a, you know, on a stomach. You just can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
We've been trained hard, but eat. You know, it's like you can't have a, think you're going to Buffalo in a car 200 miles and with a gallon of gas. It ain't going to happen. Guys, they are doing what I did, except they're taking it to the extreme.
Yeah. And you mentioned protein. Did you cut down on your protein a little bit?
Yeah, I never went past 100 grams of protein a day.
Really?
I never went past 100 grams of protein.
So as you're getting ready for the show, Danny, were you getting really excited? Because you had a feel like, you know, this is definitely going to be your best look ever.
Oh, I was elated because the last 10 days of my show, I went from 2,500 calories to 2,000 to 1,500 to 1,000 calories. So I carbo-depleted, and then I ate carbs Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So I carved up. I walked into this show. I was ready. I was full of life. I felt wonderful. And the guy, Tony, who was training with Franco, said, Danny, I hear you're in shape, but you know what's going on here. I said, I don't care. I just want to compete. So he says, lift your shirt up. And when I lifted my shirt up, he goes, oh, my God. He ran right over. And Arnold said, lift your shirt up. And he says, oh, my God. So, believe it or not, Arnold tried to talk Franco into dropping out of the show.
Really? Wow.
I know that, but he said, you know, I don't know. You, these guys all look pretty good. And, and Franco kept saying, I got this. Don't worry about it. I got this. I'm ready. So, Arnold's opinion, which he'll never tell you that, of course, you know, he's got a chance to get beat. When he saw me and he saw how good Tommy was, Roy Callender was in pretty good shape.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a great, you know, interesting show. And for me, obviously, I did something right because it's 100 years later and people are still talking about 81 Olympia.
Right. Did Mike Mensur and Frank Zane and Boyer try to get you to boycott it like they were?
Absolutely. They got a hold of me and said, you know, we're going to boycott, and this is why. Basically, they mentioned that they thought the show might be fixed, and look what happened in the Arnold show. They're going to do the same thing with Franco. We're all boycotting. And you know what? It was in my backyard. I was home. It's the last chance I'll ever get to compete. You know, just get compared to Franco.
Yeah.
He was, you know, for me, a tremendous physique. But he wasn't the best that he could be. But they were putting it out there like he was ready. So I said, yeah. Well, I'm ready. And personally, for me, his upper body looked okay. But he had a bad leg and the right pec, you know. We know that he had that dyno, and it wasn't gut. And it wasn't the Franco that I was used to seeing. Because Franco, in his prime, was the man.
Mm-hmm. What was it like backstage when you guys were all pumping up? I mean, what, did Franco let on how great he thought you looked, or did anybody else let on how great he looked?
Separated himself from the guys.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget, he was doing chin-ups, and the thing broke off the wall. I mean, he was nervous.
Right.
I was black saying, you know, bring it on. Tommy was on the floor, poor guy, cramping up, and Franco just looked at him and walked away. And I tried to help Tommy, but, you know, at the time he was working with Arnold a little bit, so I could, you know, Franco probably was a little upset with that.
Mm-hmm.
So Tommy looked pretty good, and Franco was a little nervous, but I guess he knew that he, you know, or the thought process was, I can't lose.
Yeah. So what did you feel after the prejudging, Danny? I mean, because back then, I remember there was a lot of comparisons. Jim, I'm sure you were there. You could attest to this. And they did a lot of comparisons in the symmetry round, a lot of comparisons in the mandatories. What was the feeling when you walked out of there after the prejudging? Did you feel like, you know, this was your show?
Well, in the beginning, I looked at my friend of mine, Larry Baker, who was with me, was a training partner. You know, Samir Benoit looked at me and ran to the phone and started calling everybody out and said that I won the Olympia. So Larry said to me, going to win. Everybody's talking about it. I said, Larry, I'm lucky if I get fifth. He says, what are you talking about? I said, if this is what everybody's crying about, I'm going to have to be knocked down to fifth place because you're not going to put me next to Franco second and say that he won. It's not going to look good. So let's put the bodies where he could possibly be. And that's where Dickerson got in there. I mean, Dickerson looked good, but, you know, he had his flaws. And Tommy looked good, but he had his flaws. Mm-hmm. Roy Kelly looked good, but his legs were weak, and then it was me. So that's the way I saw it. And I never thought I was going to win because I could tell by the way they were moving me around in the prejudging. And what I kept doing was walking out of line and just posing in front of Franco. So I did that times. And the audience went nuts. And then they said to me, if you do that again, we're going to deduct the point. And I said, I don't care. We know what's going on here. So I was disruptive that night, but we gave the audience a great show. I made the post down three times, and it was only the first round. I had a lot of fun, and it was an experience I'll never forget.
Yeah. Jim, what did you feel after the prejudging?
At the prejudging?
Yeah, after it was all over, you know, you saw all the comparisons and everything. You saw how great Danny looked.
Disappointing for Dan because he's already been through so much at such a young, you know, with such a young career. And You get your taste of politics, I think I'd call it, early on, especially when Franco could win a show like that with virtually no legs whatsoever. And I guess the expression is bitch tit, and, you know, yeah. Among other things. Not that I don't respect Franco. I thought he was a great bodybuilder in his time, as I did Tom Platz. You know, Tom Platz definitely came in tremendous conditioning, but with no balance. You know, Tom always was so far out of line with the legs that he couldn't win, really, if you were judging it as a strict bodybuilding, symmetrical, proportional event. So,
yeah.
It was disappointing. With Danny, everything was there. John, everything was perfect. I mean, I've got pictures that I put up in my gym just the other day that are just remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
You look and you reflect back on those days, it's just, you ask yourself, how the hell did it happen? How was he not, you know, chosen that night? And then, you know, that's the luck of the game, I guess you'd call it sometimes. And but very disappointing because he should have been Mr. Olympia.
Yeah, it is amazing when you think about it. That was over 35 years ago. And you look at pictures of Danny, and it just blows your mind. I mean, even the guys today, I think, are just so impressed by how he looked.
Remarkable. I mean, just and you know, and like he says, you don't even look at him in terms of the height aspect because there's no way you can tell how tall he is in that picture. He's just right on the money with everything. I mean, you go start from the toes, go up the calves, and go all the way up. He was a great champion, and he's even a greater champion today by. You know, maintaining himself in the business as he does and training people the way he does and imparting whatever knowledge he's gained through all these years, which is plenty, you know, not necessarily bodybuilders because he works with all types of people now, especially women. And, you know, they all love him. You know, they wouldn't be coming day after day if they didn't. So he's a great ambassador for what we consider our sport.
Danny, how'd you feel after it was all over? I was at the show as Jim was and, the audience was so, so loud. I don't think I've ever heard booing like that in any show I've ever been to, you know, in my life. I mean, once they got to you in fifth place, the booing just started then and continued all the way up to first.
Well, I've never seen that because when they called me fifth, the audience got up and booed and threw stuff at the judges.
Yeah.
And then they called Roy, they booed. And believe it or not, while the sports were filming, they stopped filming. I wish I could get a hold of that film.
Yeah, me too.
And you never got to see it. It was never produced. Here's the other thing about this crazy show. There's nobody has a video of this show. The only one that had a little sparse video was Franco. And it was a handheld cam that wasn't that good. And it showed him 90% of the time with barely any comparisons. Is there anybody who has a video? Somebody's got to have a video of the show, right?
Right.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it is.
It was heartbreaking for me, but, you know, it's like the funniest thing was I got out of the show and I'm walking toward my room and Larry says to me, are you okay? I go, I'm fine. I want to take a nap. I'm tired and I'm hungry. and all these people are following me. I mean, there had to be 2,000 people behind me, and they're screaming, "We'll get Frank Gold." I said, "Oh, no, no." And he won, and that's it. And I went in my room, and I was sleeping, and I wake up, I open the door, and there's all these people in the hall. "Is he okay?" I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And some lady brought me a carrot cake. So here you look. Oh, thanks. And I'm sitting there eating carrot cake with all these people. So I was the kind of guy, I'm mad for about 10 minutes, and then I'm good to go. So that's one thing about Arnold and me. We used to get the press after the show, not because we didn't win. It's because we got to find the next show to get at so that you don't think about what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I kind of backed out after that. I started diversifying everything else. I went to other things in my life. Enough is enough.
Hey, speaking of carrot cake, you told a story on another show, I think, where you're talking about Arnold at the 1980 Olympia, and you said he ate his carrot cake.
Yeah, it's true. I'll never forget it because he brought this cake, and he had this guy watch it, and this poor guy walked away, and I ate it. It was in Australia. This poor guy got in all kinds of trouble. I ate most of the cake, left Arnold a little bit. Be the winner, so he'll be able to get himself another one around. It's a true story.
Ironically, I think that cake is still affecting Arnold right now.
Well, listen, guys, it was great to talk to you. Danny, I never had a chance to talk to you, and I always admired you growing up through the years. And like I said, I got to see you many times with Mr. Olympia, especially that 81 Olympia. It was great to finally talk to you and hear your stories. And Jim, I want to thank you for setting this all up and for getting a chance to talk to you as well. I really appreciate you guys joining us.
You're welcome, John. Thank you.
It's a pleasure. We'll do it again someday.
All right. Thank you very much, Danny and Jim Rockell. Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, John. Have a good day.
All right. Thanks. You too. All right. Thank you again for joining us for another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks again so much to Danny Padilla and Jim Rockell for that great interview. I really had a great time talking to those guys. Join us next week for another episode where we will continue talking about the 1981 Mr. Olympia. And I want to thank our sponsors again, Redcon One, Balanced Body Labs, Old School Labs, and Florida Alternative Medicine. We will see you guys next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Take care.